T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Chris Fedor with us on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Chris, I don't have time for that. You know what I'm saying?
I thought when you were talking about takeout, I thought you were going to get in the never-ending debate about do you tip.
Yeah, I got worried about takeout. That, too. I was going to stop that right in its tracks.
You know, that sucks because, like, I feel obligated to tip because I don't want people to see, oh, Adam the Bull stopped by and he didn't give me a tip. And so I feel obligated. I don't think you should have to tip when you when you get carried
since
out.
We've had that little restaurant downstairs, though, I've seen every single host go through that discussion.
I always tip, but I hate it. I don't think you should. But anyway.
Bull, it's so funny that you bring that up because I feel like I don't know if I've done this, but people have enough reasons to dislike me because of some of the stances that I take on the sports teams in this town that I don't want to give them another one and have them think that I'm cheap. So when I tip at a restaurant, like I usually do 25% and my wife looks at me like, what are you doing?
100%.
Why are you doing that?
Yeah, 100%.
Even if I get a pizza, like if I get a pizza and I pick it up myself, I actually tip for that too. It makes no sense whatsoever.
It's insane, right? It's insane that you do that, but you have to. I agree with you totally. You don't want anybody like bad mouthing you. And I agree. I'm a ridiculous. And like once in a while, like my mom was in town a couple of weeks ago and like we went out for brunch and she wanted to pay for brunch. But I'm like, Mom, you got to tell me how much you're tipping because I'm still at the table. You've got to make sure you give a good tip.
All right, are you guys paranoid about that, though? If anybody says, go Cavs to me in just a random sentence to bring, like a non sequitur, I think to myself, oh, well, they must listen to the station. They have to know. 95% of people don't know who I am.
Well, you know, whatever. You never know who
knows you. You got to cover your bases.
You never know.
That's true. You never know who's going to recognize
that's
you.
That's right.
And you never know who's going to be listening at the time that you're on the air.
100%
no
correct.
No tipping, pipping.
That's
I got
right.
it, yeah.
All right, Chris, let's get into it. You know, it seems like more than ever, home court advantage is such a big deal. You know, we never cared about LeBron having home court. It never seemed to matter, at least in the East. And it seems like it matters now. I don't know. Are you buying that the Cavs have just found something with Tristan Thompson against Al Horford, even though they should have known it going into the series, and that's the difference? Or are we going to go back to Boston tomorrow, and are you expecting the Celtics to play great like they did in Games 1 and 2?
So I think that's the interesting thing about this whole series, guys, is that we came in with these perceptions about what was going to happen. And I feel like they've all played out, haven't they? Like, we went into the series saying, I have no clue who the Cavs are. And through four games, you really know who the Cavs are? Did they really find anything through four games?
Not sure.
We came into the series and we said, hey, Boston's a terrible team on the road, but they're so good at home, and they've got all these young guys, and with young guys comes inconsistency. And I feel like that's played itself out over these four games as well. So I feel like we've gone on this emotional roller coaster on both sides of the spectrum. And I'll just say it like this. After two games, when Boston went up 2-0, I said the Cavs can still win. The series is not over. And at that time when people were saying, hey, maybe Boston would be better off in the future without Kyrie Irving, and maybe they can trade him away and they can have Terry Rozier as their starting point guard. That was really, really reactionary. Yep. And then now that the Cavs have won two games, I feel like people are getting into this trap of being really, really reactionary as well. And sometimes the end result doesn't always match what happens throughout the course of the game. Like last night, for example, the Cavs won the first quarter by 16 points, and it was fantastic, and they looked so, so good, and Boston looked so, so bad on the road again, and all those demons came back to them early in the first quarter. Then they settled down, and they won every quarter after that. They also missed 15 layups and dunks. So some things go a little bit differently in last night's game, and we might be having a different kind of perception. So I feel like you have to be careful with this particular series because of the unknowns that still exist for both sides here.
You know, Chris, I believe it was back in December when you first penned the article, and I've been in tune, and I kind of yell at you in my brain every time I go look at a box score. But you wrote about the three-point and the perimeter shot, right, and just the impact that has on these games for the Cavs, whether they win or lose. 25% in the first two games, obviously you lost twice, and then you see over the last two games, Korver's got the shot back, J.R. Smith has the shot back. Now LeBron didn't necessarily do that last night, but is it, just from a covering standpoint, is it frustrating when you can just go to the box score and just look at the three-point percentage and there's our ball game the majority of the times?
Yeah, I think to some degree, but I think it also shows you, Jonathan, just how this team has been built. I mean, this team has been built to bomb threes, and they've put pieces around LeBron to maximize LeBron, not necessarily maximize their own guys. And that's just how they're wired, and that's just how they've been built, and I think it's something that you have to deal with. At one point, you have to give the Cavs credit because they're accepting of the identity and mm-hmm. who they are, and they're not going to stray away from it. And I think I ran the numbers last night. They either have only one loss in the postseason or zero so far to this point, where they shoot 34% or better from three-point range. So really, you can just pull up the box score and look at the Cavs' three-point percentage, and it will usually clue you in on whether or not they win the game. But Kyle Korver has said it throughout the course of this postseason. We're here to make LeBron better, not the other way around. So everything that they do is about that, and it's about the three-pointer, and it's about whether or not they make those shots. And now they're going to have to prove going into Game 5 that they can make those same shots on the road, because if they don't, then they're going to come back here and they're going to be trailing because they don't have a lot of other avenues for offense. Like in the past, they had LeBron's brilliance, they had Kyrie's brilliance, defense didn't matter, setting didn't matter, schemes didn't matter. If the three-point shot was falling or not, that didn't matter because they could overcome that. Their margin for error is not as great as it used to be. So now if they have that bad shooting night, there's just not a lot of other ways that they can go about attacking on offense. It's just the reality of this team.
Chris Fedor, Cleveland.com, is with us. Chris, I said earlier in the show that, not including LeBron, of course, that I trust Tristan Thompson, and I can't believe I'm saying this, because I wouldn't have said it at the end of the year, but I think he's the most reliable Cav to do their job more than any other player on this team besides LeBron, of course. Is that prisoner of the moment, or is that truth?
Well, I think it's a combination of both.
Okay.
I think to some degree it is prisoner of the moment, but I think he has the kind of game where there's not a lot of variance to it. You're not going to right. run offense through him, and the only thing that you need from him on a consistent basis is hustle, effort, rebounding, rim protecting, things like that, and there's not a lot of variance to that. He can bring those things every single night. He can bring those whether it's at home or on the road. So his game's not predicated on does he make shots or not.
Right.
Kevin Love's game, to a large degree, because he is the second option on this team offensively, his game is predicated on are you making those shots? Are you taking advantage of those mismatches in the post? Are you knocking down the three-pointers from the outside? Same thing with Kyle Korver. Like, Kyle Korver can still have an impact because of his gravitational pull and the way that defenses have to guard him that can open things up for his other teammates. But a lot of times with him, it's do you make the shot or do you miss the shot? And Tristan Thompson just doesn't have that kind of game, and he doesn't have to have that kind of game for the Cavs to be successful.
LeBron, after the game last night, made some interesting comments about player tracking data. I know Jason Void, I believe, presented him with the facts that he's not running with the same pace that maybe he had in previous years and in this postseason in particular. Obviously, you're a smart enough basketball guy. I think everyone listening understands LeBron can run at any pace he wants. It's how effective you are. But are we getting a little too carried away with some of the advanced metrics and some of the advanced data that maybe doesn't actually coincide with player results?
Yeah, I think so. I think there are certain things that are really, really valuable when it comes to the advanced numbers. And by the way, the Cavs used the advanced numbers to make the Tristan Thompson call and put him in the starting lineup because of his history against Al Horford. So they are valuable, and they look at everything. There are actually players in the game that follow those things. And I can tell you that the Cavs front office, like, they track a lot of stuff. How effective they are with their switches on defense, how effective they are when blitzing on defense, how effective they are when dropping in terms of pick and roll. So all of that stuff is being broken down by the Cavs. But I do think sometimes we can get carried away with those sorts of things, and they don't tell the entire story. Like, I looked at the numbers from games 1 and 2 to games 3 and 4 of pace, right? Because that's been a buzzword around the Cavs. Hey, when we push the ball and we play with pace, we're this great offensive team. The actual number that measures that by NBA standards, their pace hasn't been very different in any of these games, whether they've won them or lost them. But if you dig deeper and you watch the game, you see that they're getting shots a lot quicker and they're getting into their offense a lot quicker, and they don't have to execute all the time against Boston's stingy set half-court defense. And that doesn't always show up in the box score. So sometimes you do have to go way beyond that sort of thing. And when it comes to LeBron and how fast he's playing, I don't know that there's any human on earth that's playing faster than him at this point in time. So I would say that those numbers are flawed.
Chris, over or under 1.5 more losses in the playoffs for the Warriors?
Oh, under. I think they only lose one more the rest of the way.
In the finals or one more to the Rockets?
No, I think it's probably in the finals because they have a nasty habit of getting too comfortable with themselves and needing to have what they call appropriate fear and feeling like they're being threatened. So in the finals, I'm already predicting it. They're going to win the first two games. They're going to come back to Cleveland or Boston. They're going to lose the third one. Then they're going to win the next two. That's just kind of how they are.
Do you not like this for basketball?
No, I love it for basketball.
Oh, I
hate
it. But
that's just me.
Yeah.
That's me. And I'm not somebody who needs competitiveness, and
right.
I'm not somebody who needs a close game to enjoy it. I said this the other night with Nick Wilson. I grew up loving Tiger Woods, like watched him every single time he was in a tournament. To this day, if he is in a tournament and he's in contention, I am wearing red on Sunday. That's how much of a dork I am when it comes to Tiger Woods. And I admit it. I know it. And I go absolutely crazy to the point where my wife can't even watch Tiger in a golf tournament. She has to go in the other room because I'm so nuts. But his greatest moment to me and one of the most fun times I ever had in watching him was when he ran away with the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. It wasn't competitive. It was over on Saturday. But it was such a masterful performance, and it was such this display of greatness that I couldn't take my eyes off of it, and it was fun to me. I enjoy watching greatness. And the Warriors, to me, are the best team ever assembled in the NBA. I enjoy that, no matter how much competition they get or not.
Yeah.
I think it's up to the rest of the NBA to raise their level and try and compete with them, if it's even possible.
It's a good point. However, what I'd say to that is, when you went into a major, even though Tiger was great, and I was with you, I couldn't care less about golf until Tiger Woods showed up. And then I would watch him play, and I would always root for him. But it never felt like impossible to beat him. Like, he lost in majors sometimes. He dominated. Obviously, during his prime, he was dominant. But he could lose. Right now, it feels like the Warriors can't lose. And I know Jonathan feels the same way as you do. But I think the casual fan, whether you care about those people or not, is probably tired of Warriors Cavs, certainly.
Okay, and I think that's fair, and I think that's probably true. I think you're right in terms of that.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty hypocritical by fans, to be honest with you. Because fans always say, and I don't want to lump them all together, but the majority of fans say, this is what I want from sports. I want guys who are going to put the team first. I want guys who are going to sacrifice for winning. I want guys who are going to play the right way and not play a selfish brand of basketball. Like, that's the Golden State Warriors.
Right.
Kevin Durant took less money to go there. Not because he's a front runner, not because, you know, he couldn't win in Oklahoma City, but he wanted to better himself as a basketball player, and he wanted to become the best version of himself. That, to me, is commendable. Steph Curry is willing to make a sacrifice. He could be an alpha dog anywhere, and he could go down as one of the greatest players to ever play the game with some of the things that he's capable of doing. When Kevin Durant is off the floor, Steph Curry goes absolutely bananas. We could have peak Steph for the last couple of years. It was his team, it was his city, and he was willing to take a step back to welcome Kevin Durant and allow him to be comfortable in that particular system. Like, how do you not respect that? How do you not gravitate towards that kind of
sacrifice? I think you can respect it and still be disappointed that there's no competition, because ultimately, if you're a neutral observer, I think you want to see the buzzer beater. I think you want to see a seventh game. I don't think you want to see four blowouts in a five-game series.
Man, I think a team playing at its ultimate peak
is
something that just brings me to my TV every single time. And I think the other thing is, I would think that fans would want to tune in and watch the Warriors and even root against them. Sometimes you want to have that villain.
Like with the Yankees. I mean, that's kind of a, you know, like you root against
them. Or the Miami Heat when they assembled.
Yep.
Everybody was rooting against
them. That's right. Well,
and we live with the idea that we want to see something we've never seen before, and
That's true.
Like this Golden State team has the ability to give us that.
Yeah. Chris, good stuff, buddy.
All right, guys. Take
care. We'll talk to you soon.
Chris
Fedor, Cleveland.com.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.